Well, welcome to the third week of our summer series that we're calling Staying Power. It's about how to grow in your faith by making and keeping spiritual commitments. And the premise of this series is that spiritual growth is your most important goal in life. As we've been saying, when you grow in your faith, you're just more successful at everything else you do in life. The more you're connected to God, the better you'll feel about everything else in your life. With spiritual growth, you can find and then focus on your life's purpose with laser-like precision. You can overcome negative feelings and attitudes and become a more peaceful person and love other people the way you want to. With greater confidence that comes from a deeper relationship with God, you can conquer self-doubt and become the best version of yourself, become the person that God really made you to be. But like anything else worthwhile, growing in your faith takes effort. You can't get better at anything without a commitment, and it's the same with spiritual growth. So in this series, we're looking at several different ways that you can commit to your faith, different steps that you can take, commitments like serving in a ministry or a mission, tithing and giving to the church and to the poor, engaging in a small group, practicing prayer, and sharing your faith with other people. And our hope is that by the end of this series, you'll be inspired to commit to taking one little step, one baby step to further your faith. Now, last week we covered the most difficult, the most challenging, at least I think the most challenging of all of these steps, which is sharing your faith with other people. That's a hard one, especially for Catholics. But as we said, you don't have to be an expert in the Bible. You don't have to be a theologian to share your faith. You don't even have to impose your beliefs on other people. All you have to do is put your faith into action in the world out there in a real and authentic way that speaks the gospel to other people so that they hear it. And if you do that, we said you'll get some benefits from it as well. You'll grow in your love for God, you'll grow in love for other people, and it will deepen your own understanding of your faith. And we also said last week that the easiest way to share your faith is three simple steps. One, identify people in your life who don't have faith. Two, invest in them. Get to know them, love them, care for them, pray for them, spend time with them. And then three, when the time is right, when it seems appropriate, invite them to church with you or to watch online with you. And when you do that with humility, I promise you they will thank you for it. Now today we're going to look at another step. It's perhaps the most useful step. If last week was the most challenging, difficult step, this week is the most useful step that you can take a commitment to your faith. And that step is serving other people. Now, service for God takes two different forms. In the church, we talk about ministry and missions. Ministry are those forms of service that parishioners do for other parishioners, like reading here, being a lector at Mass, or distributing communion, or being altar servers or musicians, or other services that we do for our own parishioners. That's ministry. Missions, what we call missions, are those forms of service that we offer to people outside our parish, people who are not part of our congregation. It's the work of bringing restoration and healing to a hurting world. So that's ministry versus missions. Now, when you think about serving, right, the word to serve means to be of use to someone, right? It means you're useful, and that's a good thing. We all want to be useful, right? I mean, nobody wants to be told, hey, you're useless. Nobody wants that. So it's a good thing. But to serve in a ministry or a mission in the church means that you're being of use to God. To God. You're useful to God by serving other people, by being useful to other people. Serving in a ministry or a mission is about loving God and loving other people and putting that love into action. And in the gospel story that we're looking at today, the beautiful parable we just heard, a religious leader who was called a scholar of the law He was a learned man. He knew the law backwards and forwards, the law of Moses. And he comes up to Jesus and he approaches him with a question and he says, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" Now remember, this man was a scholar of the law. He knew what he was talking about, but this was a common question in those days, one that the rabbis debated among themselves. What does it take to get to eternal life? And so the man comes up to Jesus to kind of test him and ask him what his opinion is, and Jesus turned the question around on the man and asked him to answer it instead. And he did. And in response, he combined two verses from the Old Testament. The first verse is from the book of Deuteronomy, and it goes like this. "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, and with all your mind." It's called the Shema. It is that great Jewish prayer that observant Jews still pray today twice a day. Then the second verse he got is from the book of Leviticus, which says, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus says to the man, "You got it. You got it. That's exactly right." And that has become for Christians what we call the Great Commandment. Love God, love others. Simple, but powerful. And when we serve others, we are loving God and other people. And we're doing it in the most tangible way possible. And of course, there are many opportunities to serve, but traditionally the church has talked about two very specific ways. These two ways are the corporal works of mercy and the spiritual works of mercy. And we call them works of mercy because when we serve other people, we are performing works of mercy. We are acting with mercy towards other people. We are being merciful. Now, immediately after Jesus and the scholar of the law agreed, right, that the way to eternal life is through love of God and neighbor, the scholar didn't stop there. He wanted to know more. So he asked Jesus, "Well, who is my neighbor?" That's a really great question because that verse from the book of Leviticus, "Love your neighbor," it can be interpreted in many ways, right? It can be interpreted very narrowly to just mean to love your family, your friends, your neighborhood, people in your neighborhood, or it could be interpreted more broadly. So it was a really good question. And to answer the question, Jesus tells a famous parable that you've probably already heard of. It's so famous. It's called the Parable of the Good Samaritan. So let's take a deeper dive into that. The setting of the story is this road that runs between Jerusalem and Jericho in ancient Palestine. And that road is kind of looks like this. It's very treacherous. It's very treacherous for two reasons. One is it's got a very steep incline if you're going up to Jerusalem and a very steep decline if you're going down to Jericho. Think about hiking to the top of Mount Tam 1.5 times. That's how steep it was. But not only that, there were often gangs of bandits along the way that would prey on travelers. It was not infrequent. So Jesus tells a story about a man who is walking on that road and he fell victim to robbers and he was stripped and beaten and left for dead. And then two religious officials, a priest and a Levite, they come along eventually, but they each walk past the wounded man on the opposite side of the road. Now, it's easy to judge, right? But I'll bet every person in this church, including myself, at some point has walked by someone clearly in need and possibly someone lying in the street needing help. It happens every day in San Francisco. And so Jesus isn't trying to point out the hypocrisy of these religious officials. He does that in plenty of other places in the gospel, believe me. But he's not here trying to show their hypocrisy. In fact, the law at the time said that priests could not have contact with a dead person because it would make them ritually unclean. So they could not stop. No, what Jesus was doing was setting up the story with an unmistakable contrast in order to answer the question, who is our neighbor? Because if you would think that the priest and the Levite were the most likely people to stop and help, the next person who came along is the least likely person to render assistance. You see, he was a Samaritan, and therefore he was considered an enemy by the Jewish people. Not only was he a foreigner, an outsider, a non-Jew, there had been some really bad blood between Jews and Samaritans for centuries. It's complicated, I don't have time to get into it, but think of the Hatfields or the McCoys, and the McCoys, right? Or think of the people or group that just get under your skin, right? Someone that you just, or a group you just can't stand. That's what the Samaritans were to the Jews, and vice versa. But look what happened. Look what happened. The Samaritan was moved with compassion at the sight of this Jewish man. And so he approaches the victim. He poured oil and wine over his wounds and he bandaged them, and then he lifted him up on his own animal and he took him to an inn and cared for him. Not only did he spend his time and resources on the injured man, he also spent his money when he paid the innkeeper and promised to pay more if necessary. It's such a beautiful story, right, of unexpected mercy and compassion. And at the end of it, Jesus asks the scholar, okay, in your opinion, which of these three people was neighbor to the man who was robbed? And the scholar answers, the one who treated him with mercy. The clear point of this story is that our neighbor is every single person, even our enemy, especially our enemy. But the parable not only answered who our neighbor really is, but also how we should love them. We should love our neighbors and our enemies by serving them. We are asked by God to give the hurt and the wounded of this world our time, our money, and our resources. We are called to treat them with mercy. The corporal works of mercy are found throughout the ministry of Jesus, not just in this parable, and they provide a guide on how we should care for one another by doing things like feeding the hungry, giving shelter to the homeless, visiting those in prison, caring for the sick. And I'm proud to say that our church, St. Hilary, and the people here, we do all of that. We feed the hungry. We have a team of people who generously prepare meals for the homeless and others in need. We give shelter to people. We have a team of people who come to the rescue of those in our own neighborhood, in Tiburon, right here in Tiburon, who are struggling to stay in their homes and are facing eviction. Our church cares for the sick. We have a team of people who go out and visit the homebound and bring them communion. But we don't stop there. We also practice spiritual works of mercy. We care for the spiritual needs of others. Our funeral coordinator, Diana, and all of our grief ministers, like Rebecca here in the back and others, they comfort the sorrowful, those who are grieving. Our children's ministry provides instruction to the next generation. Our small groups offer encouragement and support for members in the midst of life's challenges. Our prison ministry that goes to San Quentin brings the gospel of hope to those who are behind bars. I'm so proud of this parish. I'm so proud of the people who do all of those great works to serve others because they are acting like Christ. In order to grow spiritually, right, we've got to act like Christ. You can't expect to grow in your faith and not be like Jesus, right? And what did Jesus tell us plainly that he came here to do? He said, I have not come to be served. I have come to serve. You see, for Jesus, serving wasn't just a good idea. It was the whole idea. The whole idea of his life. And there are opportunities all around you to put your love into action and to treat others with mercy and compassion like the Good Samaritan. Just walk out these doors and you'll find many opportunities to do that. But I would argue that you also need an action plan. Even if you want to grow in your servanthood, you need an action plan. Otherwise, that desire can easily be forgotten in the distractions of life. It'd be like saying, hey, I want to get into shape, but I don't really have a plan to do that. Probably not going to happen, right? So our ministry and our mission opportunities right here in this church could be your action plan. They are specific ways that you can take a step towards becoming a servant. And it'll be good for you too. Ministries and missions in our parish help you feel more connected to the work of the parish. And when you get up and get out of the pew and you start serving, you will, if it's the first time for you, you will feel a strange new sensation. Your anxieties will decrease. Your soul will feel fuller. I mean, you should know this, right? I mean, study after study finds this, that people who serve others are happier. That's because God designed us for service. So, if you think you're ready, you can check out all the opportunities to serve. If you go to our website, on the Next Steps page of the website, you can sign up right there. You can see all of the descriptions of our ministries. You can get more information. You can sign up right there on our website. Or if you would please take out, if you think you're ready, take out your phones right now. I love phones in church. There is no bans on phones in church as long as you're doing what I tell you to do. And that is text the word serve to the number that you see on your screen. Just type in serve and then type in that number 1-833-686-1980. We'll get in touch with you and see how we can help you. You could do a lot of things here. You could be part of our weekend mass team. Look at all the people that put all this together. Many of them are volunteers. You could be part of our hospitality and welcome team. Maybe God is calling you to help kids in our children's program. This fall, we're launching a brand new children's program during the 9 a.m. Mass called Jesus Jam. It's going to be amazing, and you could be part of it if you feel called to that. Or maybe you want to join our spiritual care team or serve the poor. Any one of these would be a great step to take. And I want to make something really, really clear here. If you take that step and you get into it and you say, you know, I'm feeling overwhelmed or it's not the right thing, whatever, I want you to know there's no obligation. You're not getting a life sentence, I pinky promise you. If you're feeling overwhelmed, you can just say, look, I need a break. No one's going to look askance at you. No one's going to judge you. Well, to conclude, I just want to tell you about a beautiful tradition that goes all the way back to the beginning of Christianity about the parable of the Good Samaritan. The church fathers, or very early church fathers, saw a connection between Jesus and the Good Samaritan. They said that Jesus himself is the Good Samaritan. Think about it. Jesus is the one who comes to the rescue of humanity, lying on the side of the road, broken and hurting. Jesus is the one who binds up our wounds and carries us to the inn to be healed. But where is the inn? The inn is the church, and we, you, are all the innkeepers. We are here to serve our broken brothers and sisters. And today, Christ says to each and every one of us the same thing he said to that scholar of the law. Go and do likewise. Go and do mercy. Go love one another. Go and serve.